Hello and welcome to this podcast from the BBC World Service. Please let us know what you think and tell other people about us on social media. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
Goal! Leading the conversation on the global game. This is World Football on the BBC World Service.
The 2023 Women's World Cup. Record-breaking viewer numbers, packed out stadiums, sell-out shirts, and the football. Oh, the football. Brilliant.
Matildas.
Matildas!
Matildas!
I'm so proud of Spain. It's the best, I'm sorry.
But then there was the other side, the Rubiales kiss following Spain's World Cup win, sparking a Me Too movement across football.
Rubiales, Palmeros, estáis fuera de juego!
2023 was seen as another landmark for the women's game, but it won't be the last, and most certainly wasn't the first. We meet Ellen Villa, who'd become the first woman to speak at a FIFA Congress in 1986 in Mexico.
I was shaking afterwards. The members that sat beside us was from Nigeria, and they asked for my autograph, but I couldn't write.
Mothers, they were afraid of having their daughters with big legs and muscles and strong fighting and all this, which proved later to be only, so to speak. Yeah. Sorry for the expression.
I know that she felt that it might not be worth it, but we need to tell her that it was very much worth it, and it has helped a lot of hundreds and thousands and millions of girls to be able to follow their dreams.
How would you like them to remember you?
I would like them to remember me as a fighter, and that I got the most of the things I fought for.
I'm Caroline Barker, and this is World Football from the BBC World Service. This is the speech that changed women's football.
Brilliant. It's here. It's the World Champions, 95.
Oh, brilliant.
And the Olympic Champions.
We're at the offices of the Norwegian Football Federation, the Ullevål Stadium in Oslo. While there's no football on the pitch, there is some work going on in the background to improve it. But we're here to go a little deeper than the surface and to find out more about Norway's defining role in developing the women's game.
My name is Per Ravn Omdal. I'm a Norwegian. I've been working on the girls and women's game since 1974, when we started in my country, and I've been working on that, to develop that and spread it, make it popular, make it accepted by parents and politicians and clubs and federations within UEFA and FIFA ever since. In the year 1974, I was asked by the Football Association. I was still a player. I was a mediocre player, by the way. If I could join some people to analyze whether the Norwegian FA should approve women's football. So they made a committee. I became a part of that, and we presented the result in 1976, at the annual meeting of the Football Association, and it was approved.
So this was in 1976. Six. Because at the time, in the context of world football, you know, there was lots of resistance to women playing the game, but that wasn't the case here.
Oh, yes, it was the case. There was a lot of resistance, but also some strong people, some strong girls, gangs and clubs and locations. So we found and we talked to politicians and found this. We have to do this. At some stage, the country has to approve it.
Mm.
Yeah, and they will. And let the old, mostly men, but also some women, mothers, they were afraid of having their daughters with big legs and muscles and strong fighting and all this, which proved later to be only, yeah, so to speak.
Yeah.
Sorry for the expression. So we started 76 with the 18 regional associations, made them introduce it together with the football association to clubs and so on, and we started. And 78, we had the first national team coach, and we got a national team going, and then it developed into what we have now. We have today around 120,000 players.
So how do we get from the resistance of the 1970s to the huge success of women's football and the World Cup and the most watched football tournament? Well, to unlock the answer to that question, we have to travel to the outskirts of Oslo. Tucked away in the quiet and suburban part of the city, nestled in between pine trees, to a block of flats that even a taxi driver has difficulty finding. Producer Sophia gave her a call.
Big call up. Hello, Ellen, this is Sophia from the BBC. Are you okay?
Yes, I'm okay.
We're just outside your address, I think, but there are quite a few flats, so we just wondered where which one you were and where we could meet you.
I'm in the first floor. I can come out and look
out for
you.
Okay, perfect. Right, we'll be outside the door that says 64.
Yes.
Okay, we'll see you soon.
Ah, here we go.
Hey, Ellen.
Hey, Ellen, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
I'm Sophia, nice to meet you.
Yes.
I'm Caroline, lovely to meet you.
Yes.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you, welcome in.
Ellen is a diminutive 4'10". She's neat and orderly, quietly spoken, a complete contrast to all 6 foot of me that's just invaded her calm.
Can we have a little look at some of your pictures?
Yes.
I saw some football pictures. Do you have any other football memorabilia?
No, I'm not a collector.
What's this one?
Norway, England.
Where's that from?
81. When Norway beat England.
Oh, go away. Why is this special?
I got it in gift from the National Association. As a gift, it's a famous
artist,
painter.
And what does that mean to you?
I like to see it.
What, us being beaten?
We're sat in Ellen's home, and out the window you can see the famous Holman Collins ski jump. And it's not lost on me that right next to it, virtually quiet to the world, is the home of someone who changed football as we know it. In 1986, for the first time in FIFA's history, a woman made a speech at a FIFA Congress in Mexico. This was the same city that had last hosted a global women's tournament, the Women's World Cup, in 1971. But significantly, that tournament wasn't supported by FIFA. No major global tournament had been held in the 15 years since. And Ellen wanted to change that.
Yes, I said that we have to have common rules. Because in the European Championship, we played 2x35 minutes and played with ball number 4. But in the Norwegian League, we played 2x45 minutes and with ball number 5. And so it was around the world. It was not the same rules. And I said that that was important, that we get that. And then I said that we must have a World Championship for women. And Then I said, we have to be participant in the Olympic Games.
Take me to the famous moment when you hear that you could talk in front of everyone at FIFA. How were you? What was your job at the time? What were you doing?
I'm a teacher. So I worked as a teacher in high school.
So you were doing that alongside working?
Yes.
Wow.
And I was a part of the Norwegian Association's board as the first woman. And I read the report from the FIFA, and it never mentioned women's football with the word. And I got very angry. And I said that we have to do something about it. And then the board agreed that I should go to the Congress and address them about women's football.
When they agreed that it should be you?
Yes, they said that women would mean a lot, that the women did it and not one of the men.
Did you think about it? Did you think, maybe not me?
No, I said yes.
Oh. Of course you did. Take me to the morning then. How were you feeling? Where were you? What was going on in your mind?
I was very nervous. And when I came to the place where it should happen, there were only men. And some women translators. But all the others in the room was men.
All men?
Yes. I sat with my members from Norway. We were four or five from Norway. And we sat together.
So how did it work? Did they ask you to come up on the stage?
No, we had to raise a card. And then you was asked to come to the stage.
Folklore has it that Ellen's speech, so loud in its result, started with a scream of anger. But the Norwegian way, as I'm finding out, is far more removed from Hollywood. You screamed at the start?
No.
No? You didn't scream?
No.
You wanted to scream?
Yes.
So what happened?
What happened was that I was low. So it was hard to reach up to the microphone.
Right.
So someone had to come and help me with it. And then I started to talk.
Are you surprised that it was not recorded, not written down, not documented?
No, I didn't think it would be that big.
Until now?
No.
So you've got it somewhere, though?
Yeah, no, I don't have it anymore.
It's gone?
It's gone.
Why don't you keep things? Like to hang on to things? Or?
I've never been a collector, but I regret it now.
You do?
Yes.
Why?
Because many people ask for it.
Oh,
and it would be nice to have for me too.
Afterwards, did anyone come and talk to you?
Yes, a lot.
And what did they say?
The Swedish said that there should not be a Swedish girl who had done that. The members that sat beside us was from Nigeria. And they asked for my autograph. But I couldn't write. I had to wait some time before I could write.
A speech that possibly changed women's football. Tossed in the bin. We asked FIFA whether they had a copy of Ellen's speech in their museum. They didn't have footage, audio or a transcript. However, we did manage to obtain minutes from the FIFA Congress. It does confirm Ellen's speech did take place, and she did in fact ask the General Secretary to draw more attention to women's football, particularly in terms of refereeing and the form of international tournaments. Listening to Ellen's speech was the then FIFA President João Havelange, a Brazilian who'd been in charge since 1974. According to official FIFA reports from the 1986 Congress, Havelange directly responded to Ellen. He thanked her and told Congress that FIFA was dealing with the topic, including working towards the first world tournament for women to take place in 1988. According to Ellen, after Haviland spoke, all eyes turned to his right-hand man.
It did get quiet, and then Sepp Blatter took the stand and said that I should have a world championship.
FIFA's General Secretary, Sepp Blatter. Yep, the same Sepp Blatter who'd go on to be FIFA president.
That was very nice to hear. And I hope it, but I didn't think he would do it at the same time.
Did you talk to him afterwards? Or?
Yes, I talked to him afterwards, and some years later he invited me to Germany when the World Championship was in Germany. And I got there, and then he held the speech on a dinner for me.
What did he say?
That I frightened him.
You frightened him into doing a World Cup.
Yeah.
Good. Good.
Ellen talks about Sepp Blatter then standing up after her speech and saying, OK, we must make this happen. Was that the key point that he said, OK, let's do this?
Absolutely.
Here's Per Ravn Omdahl again.
They reacted extremely quick and came back with a Test World Cup in China, and which was, I have to say, very successful. I was there. And then it started rolling until 91, and we had a first.
All those teams that you'd been working so hard with, all that grassroots football paying off, what did that mean to you?
It meant a lot. It was so... I mean, it was an evidence of what we had done since 1976, up, developing talent development, organizing clubs, get the schools involved, and it was happy. And I have to say, our people also loved it, that we did it. And that was a push to work even harder for the future in the same direction.
Am I reading it wrong, or I feel like you're getting emotional about that?
No, that's for sure.
You can hear the emotion in Per Ravn Omdahl's voice. The 1988 Invitational Tournament was a turning point for women's international football. After years of lobbying, FIFA were backing a World Cup. And the 1986 Congress was considered as the catalyst for change. Fred Sandbrook, president of the Canadian Soccer Association, expressed his delight at the fact that FIFA had also shown initiative in women's football by staging the first international women's football tournament in 1988. He recalled how Ellen's speech at the 1986 Congress had instructed the FIFA executive to undertake more in favour of women's football. But this was just the beginning for international tournaments. 3 years later, in 1991, and 5 years after Ellen's speech, the best teams in the world returned to China. It was known as the Women's FIFA World Championship for Women's Football for the M&M's Cup. It wasn't until 1995 that Sweden hosted the FIFA Women's World Cup, where after losing 2-1 to the USA in 91, Norway lifted the trophy. Just around the corner from the National Football Stadium and Football Federation, there's a coffee house where two legends of the game sip from their oversized cups, almost unnoticed. They are some of the first women to compete in Ellen's demanded Women's World Cup. Oh, and they won it in 1995.
You need to give me a shirt with the one star. I don't have it.
I don't have one with the one star.
If you win a World Cup,
My name is Celinda Medelin.
I'm Hege Riise, and I'm still involved in the game.
Quite a humble introduction from the Norwegian pair. However, the two go down in history as some of the biggest names in football. Linda Medelin competed in the 88, 91 and 95 competitions Hegarisa played in 91 and 95 and won the Golden Ball, and then Olympic gold at the Sydney Olympics.
The history is a part of it, but shouldn't define the future, because it's different now.
Yeah.
But for Per and all the involved people at that time, I think it's still proud to be a part of the kind of the growth of the game. Like when we won the Olympics in 2000 and saw Per standing on the sideline crying, like that's a part of the good memories.
The 1988 Invitational event, not quite called a World Cup, was Linda Mellerden's first taste of international football.
We were just proud to even go so far to go to China, and there was a lot of people watching the games. It was it's like the bees, like the Chinese. It was so fantastic, and for us it was just a great experience, and we were very proud to even be so far away. In 88 was very tough, and China were very good, and US and Germany and Sweden and Denmark. So a lot of good teams. In 91 it really kicked off, because then Pelé came to say hello. He came into the hotel and handshake all the players. Even my mother took a picture with Pelé, so she still has that hanging in her apartment. So
1991 was my first World Cup. I played the Euros on the same year, but earlier. I remember we played the opening game against China.
Yeah.
So we played driving the bus into the stadium, and all the staff that we had on the bus, like crying. You can see tears coming because it was like packed. Driving the bus into the stadium, it was crowded, and China
didn't have this police escort.
Mm-hmm.
That were driving through the streets.
Yeah.
Yeah. Norway is coming.
Yeah. And you can see, like, an opening against China. It was packed.
Yeah.
And when we scored the first goal, it was totally quiet.
Yeah.
And then we didn't score anymore.
Right. Then we lost.
And they scored. So it was like something around the stadium. Yeah.
In 1991, in front of 65,000 spectators, Norway and USA went head-to-head in the final. That would launch a rivalry which would dominate the sport for the next decade.
A final, it was a little bit unlucky.
I remember the mistake.
Yeah.
Tina was putting the ball back to the keeper, and I think it was Michelle Aker came and scored. So it was one mistake.
Losing to the big nation US.
Yeah. We came over it.
Disappointing. On the banquet.
Yeah.
2 hours later, we were over.
We won the banquet.
Yeah.
What happened at the banquet?
No, it was...
We're not talking about that.
It was a good party. But,
it was a good party. Like, it's a big location within the hotel. And Pia Sunnage, she was there with Sweden playing. Yeah. And in the back of that room, all the teams were on tables, and she had a guitar, so she brought the guitar, and suddenly we were all singing and enjoying the first World Cup.
Yeah.
Norway lost that 1991 final 2-1 to the USA. The rivalry between the two nations would continue to 1995 and the first official FIFA Women's World Cup, where they met in the semi-finals. This time it was Norway celebrating, and it was quite a celebration.
It's just a result of 1 month on the road, getting a little bit bored, trying to do something in the room.
When we walked down to the first game from the hotel and come into the lobby, and I saw there was an American football team that did some kind of celebration with that. Mm. So I was like, oh, that's cool. And then I probably talked to Linda, and when the first goal was scored, she just went up, and I was like, oh, I need to follow. Then
was your idea, so.
Yeah.
Otherwise you're driving that train on your own.
With that celebration, there was also a new rule was coming that you cannot celebrate for that long after scoring goals, so it came with a rule in FISA.
So the American thought it was...
Yeah.
Like I heard they talked about it later, it's just...
That we did something against them or to... Yeah.
Maybe it looked American.
So going into the final, having beaten the US, was that it? You just thought, this is ours?
No, we didn't, because it was Germany. We had a lot of struggle with the Germans.
Coming into the stadium, starting the warm-up, music in the stadium, start jiggling with the rhythm of the music, kind of like the confidence that you not always have going into the games. But from what we have performed the whole World Cup, at scoring 23 goals and conceded one or something. So, it was just a good feeling about the team.
It was a good atmosphere around the final. It was raining.
Yeah. Until the end.
Yeah.
And then the sun comes up and it was shining.
And then we are the champions. We played.
Yeah. Did 95... and winning it change things here in Norway?
Maybe for a little while. I don't know. The culture was still, it's a men's game. All the clubs was semi-professional. So you had to have full work or school and then training in the evening. I cannot remember that I was like really proud of being a female player.
Yeah, so funny, I played golf yesterday, and then he said, one older man, 65, he said, I only remember two names in female soccer in Norway, Hege Riise and Linda Medalen, he said. So they don't remember a lot of other names. I don't know why.
Norway was, in many ways, ahead of the curve. Pioneers like Ellen Wieler and Per Ravn Amdal had backed women's football, and then, during the 1990s, provided support and pushed for their country to be the best in the world. But what happened over the next few years mirrors many the world over. That feeling that progress had been made, but there was still more to be done in changing the societal attitudes towards the game. Ellen's speech brought the players to this point. But what was going to take it to the next level?
FIFA, all of us, must do what we are tasked to do, to lead, to have sustainable values govern every decision, truly implement transparency, zero tolerance towards corruption, accelerate the growth of the women's game. FIFA must set the tone and lead. I often get asked, how is it to work in a man's world? Always answer, I don't. I do not work in a man's world. Football belongs to all girls and all boys in the world. So I truly share your belief that ours is indeed the beautiful and global game. So let us stand together and live up to the promise and dreams we give to everyone.
Lise Klaveness was voted in as president of the Norwegian Football Federation in 2022, the first woman to hold the position in 122 years. While generations apart, both she and Ellen share similar stories in the same fight for women's football.
I didn't really know about the story until I was president myself and experienced things myself and realized the width of her shoulders, which I actually found not sad, but a bit annoying that the story was not more told and more central in the story of national team players. It's still important that more people should have known about it to get inspired, and also to avoid to take fights over again.
Of course, there are echoes with your story in that 2022 was a very different landscape to when Ellen was standing up and making her speech. Social media, the world's media, interested and invested in women's football. But when you stood there in front of a very similar situation, you've got to have those broad shoulders too. Do you see those echoes to Ellen and when she had to stand before them?
I knew the story, but I didn't know how aligned they were. Also that, you know, from a country, you know, also the people she worked with, also Per Ravn Omdal, prior president in the Norwegian Football Federation, he's still one of my most important mentors. So nothing is a coincidence. It's people that has worked for this for a long time and it's aligned. Yes, it's a different context in 2022, but still very rarely you have female presidents. Mm. Very rarely they are positioned naturally anywhere internationally. Very often it's controversial if they want to, and very often they are pushed back. So yes, we've come a long, long way since Ellen took the stage in 1986, but we also we have to be very realistic that nothing has come by itself for women's football. It has always been someone that has to fight for you, but we are still in it, I can tell you that.
So you feel not so much has changed from that?
Yeah, I think a lot of things has changed. So back then it was not really recognized at all, and now it's you know, it's in some countries a big professional sport. Most countries has a big long way to go before it's professional at league level, but it gathers billions of people when it's World Cups, which was the fight Ellen had to get World Cups for women. So of course it has moved a long, long way, but it's still the case that most countries has never had female presidents. Most countries have very few female representatives in their board. Most countries struggle to get women in as coaches, and most countries struggle to get the top league to have professional athletes that they can live from it and have the rest and the sleep you need to really perform. So it's still a long way until we have a professional environment that reflect the power women football has.
What is it about Norway that breeds Ellen, breeds you, creates this justified sense of wanting equality, wanting to be right?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, we have our problems with gender equality, we as all countries, and it's a never-ending story for most countries to try to bring this equality right. But Norway has been pioneers in very many of these discussions, not just in football, but in other areas as well. So I guess that's part of it, that we inspire each other. The history has repeated that women has been strong, and it's also been a wanted politics from the Federation of Norway. I mentioned Per Ravn Omdal before, which is a legend in Norway. He's an honorary member of FIFA, UEFA, and also our federation. So just as many men as women has fought for this. It's not a women's fight. It's a humanity fight, and it has been driven by Ellen, but also by guys like Per, who has, you know, changed the lives of all of us.
Your final message to her, what would you say to Ellen?
Thank you for what she has done for not just Norway, but for the women's football in itself. I played World Cups twice, which was, you know, very important milestones in my own life. And also we need to thank her for the courage she showed to do it. She was the only female delegate in the whole room. And I know that she felt that it might not be worth it, but we need to tell her that it was very much worth it, and it has helped a lot of hundreds and thousands and millions of girls to be able to follow their dreams.
Did anything change?
Yes, many things have changed. Just look at the big clubs now, where women's football stands has very equal rights as men. So it's very nice to see all over Europe, I think.
Do you think that was because of you?
No. A little step on the way.
So you're still fighting?
No, not anymore. Lisa will do the job now.
Someone else, yeah, Lisa can do it. Oh, are these your nieces and nephews?
Yes, my grandnephews and grandniece. They play football, everyone.
There's your grandnephew?
Yes.
And your grandniece? So she plays football?
Yes, she's 11.
Does she know the part that you played?
Yes, she has read the history.
Could we FaceTime her?
Yeah, yes, you could try.
This is Emily.
Yeah.
Hey, Emily.
Hi.
How are you?
Good.
What's it like to have a great aunt that helped women's football so much?
It's very special and fun because if she was born, we probably couldn't play football. Yeah.
What would you like to say, just finally, what would you like to say to the world about Ellen and what she means?
She made it fair for everyone to play football. And yeah, that's kind of a big thing.
What are people around the world doing to help tackle the climate emergency?
Climate shocks that we are experiencing.
Droughts, floods, decimated agriculture and so on.
The Climate Question from the BBC World Service looks for answers to those challenges posed by climate change.
How can we solve this?
It's all being discussed.
We only hear the bad stuff in the news, don't we? And there's loads of quiet progress.
Reasons to be hopeful.
Solutions exist. We just need to be able to implement them at scale.
The Climate Question. Listen now wherever you get your BBC podcasts.